All right, good morning. Y'all have a seat. The reason we're singing that song, and Jasmine, thank you for leading us in that song. We're all learning new things right now, aren't we? We learned that new song because we're in a season right now, a series that we're calling Resolute. And we started this really in earnest last week. We kind of hinted at it the first week of this year, but last week we kind of really dove in with this passage in Luke 9, verse 51, where it says that as the time was approaching for him to be taken up to heaven, that Jesus resolutely set his face toward Jerusalem. And we have kind of said over the next several weeks that we're going to really pay attention to some of, we can't look at all of them, and we're not going to go in order, but some of the stories of the things that Jesus said and did from the moment that he resolutely set himself out to Jerusalem to the moment where he arrives, and even a little beyond where he arrives in Jerusalem, and some of the things that he says and does. So we're going to pick up right where we left off last week. So if you have a Bible, we're going to be in Luke chapter 10. We ended off at the end of chapter 9 last week. We'll start at chapter 10 this week. While you're turning there in your Bible or getting it on your phone, let me tell you a quick story. So we had spent several days in Indianapolis. It was with the Franklin High School Marching Band, and we had gone for Grand Nationals, which is hosted by the Bands of America in Lucas Oil Stadium, and these students, among thousands of other students, had performed their show in Lucas Oil in front of all of these people. And as you can imagine, it had been this exciting, exhilarating, intense, exhausting few days in Indianapolis, and now we were headed home just as the snow began to fall in Indianapolis. And I'm driving a pickup truck with a big trailer on the back of it. And the trailer is filled with all of these marching band instruments of these students. And it's snowing, and this Florida boy is 10 and 2, right? I mean, I'm white-knuckling it, trying to figure out how am I going to get this truck to stay on the road. I'm as resolute as you could be of, let me just follow in the paths. You know how that happens? The snow starts to cover the street, and then you can't see the lines. I don't even know where the lines are. I'm just following the two tracks that are in front of me, trying to keep it on the road. And I'm holding this as tightly as I can, and after we'd been doing that for about an hour, I think Jennifer could see it all over my face, and she said, we need to take a break. Let's just take this next exit. And I said, that's a great idea. And so we pulled over and, you know, took a deep breath and all the things, get a drink, all that kind of stuff. And the good news was it felt like as we were finally stopping, that it felt like maybe we were finally getting out of it, that maybe just up the road, maybe just in a mile or two, that the weather was going to break and we would get south of it and we'd get back into where it almost never snows or not enough right here. So we get back on the interstate and it's not getting better, it's getting worse. The snow is just pouring, and the road is getting more and more treacherous, and I'm as concerned as I've ever been, and I'm doing everything I can just to keep it on the road. And we went another hour, in fact, longer than before. We went more than an hour, and it's still doing this. And I'm exhausted and really kind of worried at this moment, and we come around this bend. And there before us, beautifully blanketed in this white snow, was the skyline of Indianapolis. And I had just drove an hour in the wrong direction, right back to Indianapolis. In fact, I went farther. It wasn't that I just went back to the starting point. We had left Indianapolis the night before and driven 45 minutes outside of Indianapolis so we could have a head start the next morning. So I had driven not only an hour in the wrong direction, I had driven an hour and 45 minutes in the wrong direction. I just passed that exit that we stayed at, just kept going apparently. I missed all the signs. I mean, you would think that if the weather's getting worse, you would think you would go, oh, maybe we're going the wrong way. But no, that never even crossed my mind. I didn't pay attention to the exit signs as they're getting higher in number instead of lower in number. And oh, by the way, have you ever noticed that when you're on the interstate, there's 65, and underneath it, guess what it says? The direction you're heading, which was north, and I was supposed to be going south. And the really sad thing about the whole thing is I have a GPS in my truck. I have a GPS on my phone. But I didn't put it in there because I knew the way home, right? Who needs the GPS? It's this reminder that it's one thing to be resolute, but being resolute in and of itself is not inherently good if you're resolutely going in the wrong direction. And truth has to be a part of this conversation. You can be really solid and sure and courageous and heading in a direction, but if it is not in correspondence with reality, if you're not heading truly the way you're supposed to, then it's not good. And so we're going to unpack this story. We've already said in 9:51, Jesus says he's resolutely set himself out for Jerusalem. Like, his path is clear, unwavering. His conviction is solid and unflinching. And we said last week that to live a life that's not resolute, and you can do that. You can say, you know what, I'm not going to pick anything. I'm not going to choose anything. I'm not even sure if there is any real truth. I'm just going to sort of go with the flow. Whatever feels right today, that's what I'm going to do. And you can do that. I'm just telling you that that kind of life is always filled with anxiety and fear and anger and despair. Because when you never have anything to grab hold of that you're certain of, when you never have anywhere to steady your feet to say, I'm certain of this, when you're never resolutely heading in any direction, it is a recipe for anxiety. And so at some point, you have to choose a direction. But man, you want that direction to be in the right direction, right? To be resolutely going with the truth. So this story that we're going to look at, it comes right after. Remember, we left off last week at the end of chapter 9, and we said that to live a resolute life is automatically going to be costly, no matter what direction you choose. If you choose a direction, it means you are not choosing some other directions, right? You can't go in every direction. So you're saying no to some directions. If you say yes to one thing, it means you're saying no to other things. And we talked about how being a resolute person, living a resolute life, is costly. And then we pick up here in chapter 10 at verse 1. After this, the Lord appointed the 72 others, and he sent them two by two ahead of him to every town and place that he was about to go. And he told them, the harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send out workers into the harvest field. And then notice this, go, I'm sending you out like lambs among wolves. Anytime you read a story or watch a movie, or the tendency always is to identify with what you believe to be the hero in the story, right? To say, oh, that's my kind of person. Those are my kind of people, right? So many have said it. Here's a couple. J.R. Martin said this, nobody is a villain of their own story. You're always the protagonist. You're always the hero of your own story. You're not going to make yourself the villain of your own story. Christopher Vogler said the same thing. Every villain is a hero of his or her own story. So we're naturally inclined in this story to hear ourselves as the lambs. In fact, you may find yourself going, oh man, I get that. I'm standing for truth, and it's like the world around me doesn't believe it. And they're wolves, I'm telling you. And they're mean, and they're hurtful. And I get it, man. I understand what he's saying. They were sent out like lambs among wolves, and I'm sent out like lambs among wolves. But if we would allow it to, this story gives an opportunity for us to really ask the question, are you a lamb or are you a wolf? Unable, maybe unwilling, maybe even hostile to the truth. are you really a lamb? Or are you a wolf? As the story goes on, and we're going to skip around in this story, it comes up again in verse 5. He sends them out and he says, when you enter a house, first say peace to this house. And if someone who promotes peace is there, then your peace will rest on him. And if not, it will return to you. And he goes on to say, look, don't bother with the houses, with the people who do not promote peace. Now, we're not going to dive into, we don't have as much time as we need to dive into what it means to be a person of peace. And certainly, at least the idea of shalom is bigger than the absence of conflict. We've talked about that before. This is what it means to be everything good and right and just. And so he's essentially saying if there's a person in that house that has this posture that is willing to receive the truth, then you stay there. But if there's somebody in this house, if there's no one in this house that's willing to receive the truth, then you move on. He'll later say you just shake the dust off your feet. It's another opportunity to say, am I a person who's willing to receive the truth, or am I not? If you keep going in the story, it happens again a third time in this same story. Look at verse 16. Whoever listens to you listens to me. Whoever rejects you rejects me. And whoever rejects me rejects the one who sent me. At other times, Jesus will say it like this. He'll say, he or she who has ears to hear, let them hear. At the, near the very end of this story, in verse 23, he'll say, blessed are the eyes who see what you see. It's all saying the same thing. Are you and I a person who is a lamb, or are we a wolf, not willing to hear the truth, hostile to it? Are you a person of peace, or are you not? Are you one who hears, who listens, or are you one who doesn't? Are you one who sees it, or have you closed your eyes? It's all sort of pointing at the same thing, presenting us with the same dilemma. Every one of us, I think, would say, yeah, I want to know the truth. I want to be a part of the truth. But I would think for the most part, at least the vast majority of the planet would say the same thing. And yet this world is full of different ideas. So maybe it's worth it for just a few minutes, and we've just got a few minutes, to look at three reasons why I think sometimes we're not willing to see the truth, why we're not willing to hear it. Here's reason number one. We don't want to be duped. You don't want to be tricked. You've been misled. You've been lied to before. And you don't want to be lied to again. And so every one of us has a little bit of skepticism, a little bit of suspicion about the messages we're hearing, because you say, can I really believe this? Is this true? We live in an age where we have more ready access, we've talked about this before, more ready access to more information than any other people group on the planet in human history. Like, you can pull this thing out. You can ask Alexa. My father-in-law says Alexa is his girlfriend. He talks to Alexa all the time. You can ask Alexa, or I could ask, hey, Siri, tell me who won the game last night. Maybe. See, she talks to me when I don't want her to, and now she won't talk. Anyway, you have ready access, right, to more information than at any other point in history, which also means that you have ready access to more misinformation than any other point in history, right? And you know that. And every one of us knows it. And so there's a skepticism. I don't want to be duped. I don't want to be tricked into this. And this comes up in this story. Look at verse 17. The 72 returned with joy, and they said, Lord, even the demons submit to us in your name. And he replied, I saw Satan, fall like lightning from heaven. You know what that word means, by the way? Satan? That word literally means the accuser. In verse 20, it says, don't rejoice that the spirits submit to you, but rejoice that, and get this, your names are written in heaven. That's not what the accuser says. The Satan, the accuser, says, you're not lovable. You're not redeemable. Nobody's coming after you. What you've done, nobody comes back from that. Nobody cares for anybody like that. That's what the accuser says. And Jesus says the Father is like this dad watching out the window, hoping you'll come around the corner so he could run toward you and wrap his arms around you and say, come on home. You're home. The accuser's native language is deception. It's lies. There's a reason why there is so much misinformation in our world. Some of it is simple human depravity. But we cannot lose sight of the fact that there is an enemy among us that is trying to deceive all the time. Trying to steal, kill, and destroy all the time. And if you just told outright lies, it would be unbelievable. You'd say, I'm not going to believe that. That's a lie. But that's not what he does. He takes the truth and wraps lies in it so that it sounds believable. But then you find out it's not. And so there's a reason why we're skeptical. And so we constantly find ourselves trying to figure out, what voice do I listen to? You've been there too. Who can I trust? Who do I listen to? If we really are like those people who are blind and they're encountering an elephant for the first time. Remember, we talked about that story last week. And we only get a piece and a part because we're finite and we only see a part of the puzzle, then we've got to have other voices in our life that we can trust. So what voices in your life can you trust? Can I make a case for Jesus? You can trust him. If it's people lie for a lot of different reasons. Some people lie because they want to mislead you. They want to sell you something, or they want to get something from you. They want to trick you. They want you to be a part of what they're doing. And so they lie to get you to do something. Other people lie because they don't want to be found out. They don't want to be exposed. They don't want you to know. So they lie out of fear, out of guilt. And sometimes people mislead you, and it's completely innocent. They just have been misled themselves. And they're just passing on the favor without even knowing it. So how can you know if you can trust Jesus? Well, if it's a matter of, does he know what he's talking about? If Jesus is who he says he is, he knows what he's talking about, right? If he is the Word made flesh, if he is God among us, if he was there at the beginning when all things were made, then he is the definitive voice. He is the truth. In fact, that's what he calls himself, the truth. And you can trust him. Listen to what in Job 28, it says this. Where then does wisdom come from? Where does understanding dwell? It's hidden from the eyes of every living thing. It feels that way, doesn't it? But God understands the way to it, and he alone knows where it dwells. If Jesus is the Word of God, if our Bibles, if the Bible you're holding right now is the Word of God, then it can be trusted, because he can be trusted, because he knows what he's talking about. But if it's a matter of, can you trust him because you're afraid he's going to dupe you? It's what Matt and Parker were just talking about. People lie because they want to get something from you. Jesus resolutely set himself out for Jerusalem because he wanted to give something to you. He's not in self-protective mode. He's not trying to sell you something. He's giving himself for your sake. You can trust him. That's one reason that people maybe close themselves off to the truth. It's because they're afraid of being duped. Here's number two. It starts in look at verse 21. Chapter 10, verse 21. At that time, Jesus, full of joy through the Holy Spirit, said, I praise you, Father, Lord of heaven and earth, because you have hidden these things from the wise and the learned, and you have revealed them to little children. Yes, Father, this is what you were pleased to do. Why? Well, that doesn't make any sense, right? You would think that the wise and the learned would be the ones that have the sort of corner on truth. And what Jesus is saying, no, it's the children that I'm revealing this to, that I'm showing this to. Why is that true? All right, reason number one that it's hard to know the truth, that it's hard to be lambs sometimes, is because you're afraid of being duped. I think reason number two is right here. Jennifer has this Uncle Randall. Randall Crabtree. Randall is a character, and Randall loves to play kind of jokes. He has games. He loves puzzles and brain teasers and riddles, and he's constantly, every time you get around him, he's sharing another riddle with you, and I think it's because he loves people, and it's the way that he can sort of engage you pretty quickly. And so, hey, look at this. Let me show you that. Let me put this piece of rope around your buttonhole, and you can't get it off of your jacket, and just all these kinds of things that he does, and he loves especially to mess with kids. So he's telling me this story a while back, and he said, I'm talking to this little boy, and he was at church, and so I'm talking about some of the church stories that we tell to our kids. And he said, I started talking to him about Noah and the ark. And I said, how do you think that all those animals fit on that boat? I mean, that's a lot of animals. Big animals. Like, have you seen an elephant? Two elephants were on that boat. Have you seen two giraffes were on that? He starts going through, and you could tell this little boy's getting concerned, and he's trying to figure out. It was almost like he'd never thought of it before. Oh, my goodness. How did all those animals fit on that boat? He kind of got confused, and then he sort of gave up, and he walked away, And Randall just let him go. I would not have let him go and be like, no, I got to fix that for you. But he let him go. And the kid, about 30 minutes later, he said, came back. He'd forgotten all about it, Uncle Randall had. The little boy came up to him and he looked at him. He said, Mr. Crabtree? Yeah? Babies. And he's like, what are you talking about? Babies? Baby animals? Some of you just went, what? Like, what if they were baby animals? How is it that I've heard that story my whole life since I was this big and no one let that be a possibility? Here's reason number two that sometimes we're wolves instead of lambs. Because when you think you already know, you're not willing to listen more. And sometimes being wise and learned keeps us from discovering more of the truth. And when you're a child, you're willing. You have the wonder and the questioning and the curiosity. And let me tell you right now, I don't know, I don't care who you are or what you've learned or how many books you've read or what degrees you have right now, you do not know the full picture of the truth. You don't have it in your pocket. A couple of reasons. One, because you're finite and the truth is so much bigger. But two, because the truth is not just an abstract idea. The truth is a person. The truth is Jesus. I am the way and the truth and the life, he says. I can't even figure out the people that live in my own house. How do I think that I know the fullness of Jesus? But we're going to miss discovering more of the truth if we've decided we already know enough of it. And we cross our arms to it. And you become a wolf. That's reason number two. Reason number three is going to come from a different story, and we just got a couple of minutes. It starts in Luke 20. So go from Luke 10 over to Luke 20, and there's another story. We're not going to dive deep into it. We're just going to look at it sort of from a broad level perspective to look at reason number three, why sometimes we're closed off to the truth, why we're not lambs, we're wolves, why sometimes we're not a person of peace, we're the opposite. And so here it starts in verse 1 of chapter 20. One day, as Jesus was teaching the people in the temple courts, he's proclaiming the good news, and the chief priests, the teachers of the law, together with the elders, came up to him and they say, tell us by what authority you're doing these things. Who gave you this authority? Now, we're predisposed to hearing those people, chief priests, teachers of the law, elders, and we know that they're the ones that are going to reject and ultimately kill Jesus, because he's already told us that. So we're predisposed to hear anything that they say as absolutely against an enemy and disregard it. But they're asking the right question. This person has come into their flock, their turf, their territory in the temple. And he's saying things that they haven't heard anybody say before. And they're trying to figure out, why in the world should there be any credibility to your voice? Why should you be trusted? Because there's a lot of misinformation out there. They're asking the right question. And this is how Jesus answered. He says, I'll ask you a question. Tell me, John's baptism, was it from heaven or of human origin? And they discussed it among themselves, and they said, now if we say from heaven, then he's going to ask, well, why didn't you believe him? And if we say of human origin, then all the people are going to stone us because they're persuaded that John was a prophet. So they answered, we don't know where it's from. And Jesus says, well, then I'm not going to tell you what authority I'm doing these things. Now, I don't think that this question that Jesus asked them, John's baptism, what authority was it, human or God? I don't think the only reason he's asking that question is because he's trying to trick them. I think Jesus is always hoping, inviting us to know the truth. So Jesus says, hey, John's baptism. You know one of the most definitive moments that humanity got a glimpse of Jesus' authority? Was when John baptized him. And the Spirit of God came down like a dove. And a voice from heaven said, this is my Son in whom I am well pleased. You need to listen to him. He's laying the truth right there for them to find it. But what do they do instead? You notice it? They're not even interested in the truth. That's not the question they're asking. Which is true? Is it one or the other? They're asking the question, if we answer this way, how will people respond? If we answer this way, how will people respond? And their whole objective in that moment is to keep things the same as they are right then. What? How do we answer so we keep the power and don't make waves? You want to know the number three reason why people are afraid of the truth is because it's going to disrupt their life. And it's more comfortable to live the lie. I'm going to invite the praise team to be making their way up. I think we're going to sing one more song together. And I think it's really important for us to rest in this conversation. I've kind of hit you with a lot, but this is a big part of what I feel like is going on in our world right now. And it's one thing to be resolute, to say, I'm not wavering. I'm courageously going in this direction. But if that does not line up with truth, with reality, then it's not noble to head resolutely in the wrong direction. When I came around that corner and saw that skyline, Indianapolis, I could have ignored it. I think that that's sort of what's happening here with these teachers of the law and chief priests. It's their Indianapolis skyline moment. It's right there for them to see the truth. They may have missed all the other signs, but here it is right in front of you. But I could have kept going the same direction. It's just the weather would have gotten worse, and it was not going to get me home. And if you want to get home, you got to resolutely set yourself in that direction. And so this is an important conversation. Are you a wolf or a lamb? Am I a person of peace or am I not? Am I one who closes off my ears? Am I listening? Am I willing to see? Or am I not? We're going to sing this song, if you would. Let's stand and let's sing this song together.